You are listening to the Punk News Podcast, episode 385. There's nothing special about that number. Hello and welcome to the Punk News Podcast. John, is there anything special about 385? Is that an anniversary? Is that a famous year in world history? Is that when the, was that like the Council of Nicaea? Like, was there anything in 385?
No, it's long before that. It's near the end of the Roman Empire,
though. Let's see.
Wow, near the end. That is something. I mean, there's not even like a good caliber of gun that's
It is known as the year of the consulship of Augustus and Bauto. So,
yeah, I was going to say that, but
so there you go. Let's see, 385, copper extraction and casting began in the mines of Kananchi in southmost Africa. Got that. 385, man. Excellent. I don't know. This does not bode well for this episode. John, I've decided in the past 20 minutes or so that I'm going to become a really big numerologist, and I'm only going to put an effort on these episodes if I think there is some, mystically important purpose. Okay, we're getting up there, right? So there's got to be, like, at what point do we hit a prime number?
I mean, it's divisible by five. That's something, like, every fifth one is maybe...
I want, like, can we somehow turn this podcast into like a new cryptocurrency, and every time we hit a prime number, we get a new like a pod coin kind of thing, and that somehow makes us rich.
Well,
that's what everyone cares about.
Better question, can we just turn this into a pyramid scheme?
If you'd like to know, please send $10 to adam@punknews.org with your PayPal account.
I think at this point, it's like the real question is whether or not we can be mildly entertaining for the next hour or so. But hey, Whatever.
I mean, hey, I have once extracted $5 from a listener, and that's all I've accomplished.
I extracted $5 from my wife's purse.
Yeah, I will say this. I don't know if I should be. Tell me if I should be annoyed by this or not. A couple of writers at Punk News, like, they'll interview some band once, or they'll interview some band, you know, and then the record label or the band will just send them like a whole box of cool shit. I've never once from a band or a record label gotten a whole bunch of cool shit. Now, is that a cool good thing or a bad thing? It's a good. It's a bad thing in that people are getting all this free bribery. I'm not getting any sweet bribery, but on the other hand, is do they see me perhaps more of a professional and less as a friend? Since I'm not getting free crap, you know what I mean?
Maybe someone
don't like you, John.
as someone that has like really consciously and publicly not tried to pursue music writing or anything like that as a career, I feel that I should be on like the free shit train, because like it's not payola if you give it to me because I have a day job. It's not going to influence me if you send me a shirt, but that doesn't happen. And what I've learned is that I think that getting free shit back in the Punk News heyday got so horrible for a while that I've somehow like subconsciously pushed away any and all offers of it, because there was a point where I was in university where like some record label sent me, it was like 12 records or like the CDs, like 12 CDs in a box. It was basically their entire catalog, but they didn't put out music that like A, we had ever talked about, or B, was sort of the music we'd talk about. Like, it wasn't like some scrappy little punk label being like, hey, here's our stuff, like let's get us involved in Punk News. It was like some like middling indie label that was putting out just like, I assume it was like regional stuff, but it was like, you know, like some record label from Brooklyn, and they went out and they got you know, all these various like Brooklyn indie bands that were doing stuff at the local clubs there, and they released all their records, and they weren't punk per se. They weren't necessarily bad or anything like that, but it was just like all over the fucking place. And then like package it all up and send it to Canada to show up in my dorm room. And I don't know what to do with it. And then you sort of feel obliged because they must have spent like $40 to ship this thing to me. But like, what do I do with it? I'm not going to go review 12 records. Like I have to go to calculus. Like I can't do anything particular with this. And none of the bands are ones that I'm super prompted to talk about either, because they're not bands I like. Or
if you didn't ask for it, or if they didn't ask you, do you want it? Then you have no obligation whatsoever.
No, I mean, I'm not, it wasn't weighing on me. It was more weighing on me that like, yay, now this is in my room. Like this is, I'm an inadvertent hoarder because people keep sending me like CDs that I don't even want. I can't sell because they're small enough that like no one knows about them. Like there was a while where like Island Records decided to send me everything. And that was great because it was
Island Records,
good. Right? And they sent me like everything in like 2000 and like 2000, say 2003 or something like that. And so, you know, I'd go to the mail and there'd be like the new Mariah Carey CD or, you know, the new Backstreet Boys CD. Like Island put out very little of anything that we'd talk about. The only thing that Island would have released in like the early 2000s that we would have given a shit about was the Bronx. Because the Bronx were one of those bands that was like sort of mysteriously involved with a major label, but weren't really on a major label. Like a major label was somehow funding White Drugs or something, right? Like they had one of those mystery things that was happening with a lot of labels back then. But like that was it. I can't think of who else would have been on Island. Like, okay, like the Bronx and Andrew WK would have been on there. And then
like U2 was on there, I know, back in their heyday. I don't know if they were at that point.
Yeah, I mean,
you could have hung out with Bono, Adam.
What's that?
You could have hung out with Bono.
I don't hang out with Bono. Did you hear that fucking interview Bono did?
He's a dual bag.
Jesus Christ.
My first year at the org, I reviewed that U2 album that got thrown into everybody's iTunes. That was probably the most hate I ever received for anything I ever did.
You received hate for insulting the U2 album that we were all non-consensually.
I didn't really insult it. I just said it was very mediocre, but people are just like, get the fuck out of here with that. Fuck you, you fucking fuck. I mean, it was just like, holy shit. And honestly, half the people were like, eh, it was kind of, but most people, but a few people were like super angry.
Wait, were they mad that you reviewed YouTube?
I think it was that I did it.
Okay. I'm like, no one liked that record. I can't imagine that.
It literally had one good song.
Well, didn't it have a song with Joey Ramone on it?
But it didn't have any.
No, it had a song called "You Can't Kill Joey Ramone."
No, that's Sloppy Seconds. It had a song called "The Something of
the Ballad the
Ghost of Joey Ramone."
You know, it wasn't the ghost. It was the spirit of Joey Ramone.
It was basically,
yeah, "You Can't Kill Joey Ramone" is a sweet Sloppy Seconds song from their latest album, which came out like 2000.
Anyways, if you get Island Records to send you everything,
that's gonna bother. I'm looking that up. That's gonna
like send you everything and things that you couldn't possibly do anything about. Like, what am I gonna do with a Mariah Carey CD, right? Like outside of I wouldn't even set my drink on it. But like that I could just turn around and guilt-free sell. It was like free money. It was like I got an allowance from Island Records. It was great.
I'm Googling you. I Google U2. Now, I don't know, maybe Google is so customized now, but I Google U2 and it says the first things that come up are U2 discography, war, U2 tour, and U2 Songs of Innocence, punknews.org review. Anyway.
Sorry. The song was called The Miracle. Bracket of the Joey Ramone. Of Joey bracket.
Dude, that's such a cheap shot. It's like, you know what, Bono? You're like the most famous musician in the world. Like, do you really need to be, you know, ganking off the Ramones for coolness? It's like, can't you leave anything? Like, just be it. Like, what? That's the criticism of Bono. He has to be everything. He has to win everything. You know. So it's like, dude, can't you just let the Ramones be the Ramones? Like, do you really need to juice them to boost your own credibility? However, with Bono, he's done significant work in eliminating and fighting against childhood AIDS in Africa. So no matter what, I can't hate the guy, because even though he makes like the worst music I've ever heard, and even though he's a total cheeseball, Like, he's literally saved lots of children's lives. Like,
well, I can't hate him. Great, but like,
I want to hate him. You ever heard? Okay, so you get two CDs. You get Mariah Carey and you get U2. I listen to U2 all day long. Before I listen to Mariah, and maybe you agree with that, John. I know you have a little bit of a pop. You're a little bit of a pop.
Here's the thing, though. He can save dad rock. He can save,
like, for my dad.
It is dad rock, yeah. But like, he can save like as many children from AIDS as he can, and that's fantastic. But I still don't care about his highfalutin opinion about what rock and roll is any more than I would care about what motherfucking Teresa's opinion on rock and roll would be. Like, you can save lots of kids, and it does not mean that you have a valid rock and roll opinion.
I would care what Mother Teresa has to say about rock and roll, because I think she truly believes what she's saying, whereas I think Bono just says what he thinks sounds cool.
Adam would listen to crusty Canadian garage punk bands that injected children in Africa with AIDS. He would prefer that. That's what I'm taking.
Well, only because I'm a like unapologetic nationalist. But no, the exactly. but here's the thing about, I don't know, let's talk a little bit about that interview, because it infuriated me, the like little bit of it that I read. Like, the big pull quote from that interview that he did with Rolling Stone. And first of all, like, this giant puff piece interview that he did with Rolling Stone, because it wasn't just like he interviewed with a music critic or anything. Like, he interviewed with like
Jan Wenner,
like the guy, right? Like, did he not interview with like one of the Jan owners Wenner. Or something like that? Yeah. So
Jan Wenner.
Okay, there you go. You know these people, right? So at one point in this interview, he comments or something about like that rock and roll has become too feminine or too girly. Like, I can't remember the exact terminology that he used for it, right?
What a jackass.
And then he somehow links that to young men right now don't have an outlet for their anger because they can't like push their anger into the rock and roll sphere, and therefore, I don't know, we've like fucked up a whole generation of youth or something like that, or like this whole generation of youth is adrift at sea, unable to, you know, let their demons out in a healthy way because they don't have rock and roll anymore. Fuck off. Like, that is the worst, most aggressive musical opinion I can think of anyone uttering in the last ever. And it's worse because it's fucking Bono and they've given him a soapbox to go do that kind of thing on. I mean, think about that for a minute. Like, how go and start rifling through all of your CDs and all of your records or anything like that. Even if you are trying to be a fan of music that involves, you know, the gender that is the other 50% of humanity there, you're still going to end up with mostly men. It's not at all, a genre which is in any way being like dominated by like the female perspective or anything like that. It's like horribly underrepresented. And I come away from looking at that being like, I don't want to listen to like a single band that's a male in it in all this year, almost just as a, like, just as a reaction to Bono's stupid opinion. And I would still end up listening to like a bunch of fucking cool rock and roll records. So I don't understand even, I can't fathom what that opinion could come from. And going and then saying that all of these like these poor repressed, you know, young men don't have anywhere to go be aggressive in music. It's like, yes, they do. They can go play in rock and roll bands and be aggressive because that's what most of rock and roll is still. Like,
but U2 is the most aggressive.
Yeah, U2 is real aggressive.
You could never do that again. I'm looking at the Rolling Stone review of Songs of Innocence. 5 stars. Twice as many as I gave them, at least.
Honestly, Adam, I think maybe what he, I think what he, well, not what he was getting at, but I think it was basically hip-hop and R&B are killing rock, not killing, but beating rock and roll highly in the charts. And I think Bono is seeing a change in the cultural tide, and he's trying to remain relevant. And I think to a degree, maybe he doesn't understand hip-hop and R&B. Now, I love hip-hop, but I definitely like rock and punk better. That being said, I think he's struggling to understand it. Secondly, I think what he's getting at is I think he's attacking the same kind of thing I'm attacking, is boring, you know, bland mid-tempo rock, which I can't stand. You know, quite paradoxically, that's exactly what U2 makes. You know,
so he's fighting it by making it himself.
Yeah, but the point being is, I think it's a bullshit opinion. I think he could have expressed himself better. I don't think he meant to say women are bad, And then if he did it, he's a total dickbag. I think he just didn't know how to express it, and he kind of got ahead of himself. That being said, punk rock-wise, man, the girls are kind of beating the shit out of the boys. Most of my favorite new bands have, like, girl singers who are all girls, man. Code Hangers, Posers, Up Up Ups, a band I'm going to play today. The girls are kind of making more aggressive music than the guys, and I wish some of the guys would start making more aggressive music again. I could be wrong.
But there's so many. There's so many bands still that are like completely male that even if you had all of these, you know, mid-tempo, you know, boring, you know, middle of the road, mushy male punk rock bands, there's still enough males that are playing on the aggressive end of things that they're going to outnumber the women that are there. Like that there's no way that Bono's point makes like any sense at all, except that he's been living in a hyperbolic chamber for several years and they've somehow fucked up the amount of gas that goes into the chamber to keep him alive. So when they went and interviewed him, they had like given him like a little bit too much, you know, CO2 or a little bit too much like nitrates or whatever aromatherapies are pointing in there were a little bit too much and his brain was broken. And then he went and did that interview. That is the only rational explanation, is that he's sleeping in some sort of water tank.
Listen, man, it's tough to be a man of the people when you make, you know, $80 million a year and live in a castle. You know what I mean?
Here, I'm gonna now ghostwrite Bono's next
interview.
I'd
love to test that theory, John, but unfortunately.
Well, listen, speaking of testing theories, I'm going to reach into the mailbag while Adam just further decides why he hates Bono more. This is from Simon. Here's what Simon has to say. Punk News, I always enjoy your end of year playlists, but I feel you really dropped the ball this year. No Rancid, no Hot Water music. I like underground music as much as the next guy, but there does come a point where you're being too punk for your own good. Don't ignore popular stuff just because it's popular. Popular stuff, on the punk scale of popular, can be good too. The new Rancid is the best thing they've done since Life Won't Wait. Classic Rancid. And that's from Simon.
Here's what Rancid and Hot Water music have to do. I don't think either of those records are necessarily bad or anything like that. But if you are a late career band and you've been putting out things for 20 years or whatever, you have to kind of combat two things. One, you have to combat burnout, right? Where people have heard your shit. They've heard your bad shit. They've heard your slight return from the bad shit and then your descent into further bad shit. And at a certain point, it feels like a lot of work to go and to pick up and devote a whole lot of time to, you know, a band of people that have like had enough chances when there's so much stuff that's out there. So they've got to combat that. But then they have to combat that, like, even if they have a good record, if it's good by the terms that the band's already defined, it's something that you've heard, right? So I don't think that Hot Water music record was necessarily bad or anything like that, but like I can't fucking remember more than one song off of it right now, and I don't think it's necessarily anything even to do with the songs. It's just that like I've heard lots of Hot Water music songs, so at the end of the day I listened to that record and I was like, these are more Hot Water music songs. But then I'll go listen to some band that I never heard before and I'm like, holy fuck, this is new and it's hooking me, right? Like that's the issue. Rancid, Rancid's like a baggage band for me. Like there was a time where, you know, that was my band, right? I had a big fucking Rancid poster on the wall in my dorm and everything. Like I was a Rancid guy and I devoured, you know, their records for a period. But then when they fucked up, it was hard to get climbed back up that mountain, and they it's not like they stumbled and then recovered. It's like they stumbled and then the sheen was off. So I almost like I approach their stuff these days with like with trepidation, where I'm like ugh, like I know this is gonna disappoint me. I know this is gonna make me mad, and I don't know if I want to like absorb all of my energies into that. Like I'm worried that me seriously engaging with the new Rancid record is going to be like mouth breathers on the internet engaging with Star Wars, where instead of just going into it and being able to enjoy it, they're going to be like, well, I saw that movie and here's my 35 bullet point list of nitpicks. And like, ugh, I don't want to be that guy. I'd rather just not be part of that conversation than be that guy. I don't know. Are we ignoring old bands, John?
Are we ignoring old bands?
Well, because here's a legitimate question.
But weren't Menzingers and Propagandhi our number one and two? It just didn't strike a resonance. That Rancid record just didn't strike a resonance with any of the people who were on the show that day, or our writers. You know, I didn't remember seeing it on many lists, but it wasn't horrible. It's just, you know, weird.
I mean, it factors into something that I've been thinking about a lot, and really, I mean, I've been grappling with. Because I think that not acknowledging this is the road to burning out of music fandom is a lot of the guys that were punk news guys back in the early 90s, when they got a little bit older, or then when they got their careers and they started to have kids and things like that, they dropped and quit, right? They were like, you know, I've done my punk news years, you know, hanging up my hat, going on with my life. And when I've seen some of them try to get involved in music conversations online afterwards, a lot of them have expressed an opinion that's they would be like, hey man, I'm not going to get into that right now. I listen to four things ever, and you know, I'm content with that. So I'm cool. I'm out. Right. And you get this impression that trying to keep up with everything and trying to be this, a critical omnipath, it takes way more time and energy than I think anyone puts into it. So I've been I've been struggling with that myself, because you know, two kids and all that, and I'm like do I need to be someone that has an all-encompassing worldly knowledge of the punk scene and what's going on in it, and be able to kind of take everything that's happening and filter out the crap and go and say these in the world of punk rock were the things that everyone should be paying attention to. Should I put that amount of attention into it, or can I almost self edit for the sake of my own sanity? Right. And that's where that music newsletter that I'm writing sort of comes from, is it's strictly me talking about Canadian bands, but it's almost doing that as a survival mechanism, right? It's me just going you know what, here's some boundary that I can attach to this. And I'm of the impression that, you know, and I've not been proved wrong about this, I think, yet, you know, wherever you go in the world, there's still, even today, so much rock and roll that's happening that, you know, if I was to go in to tell you that, John, you are only allowed to get into bands from, you know, North Dakota, right? If you really went and dug in to what is going on in all the local scenes and all the basement shows and everything that's going on in North Dakota, you would still come out of the year being like, you know what? I discovered and found a bunch of bands that I'm into right now, and they are cool.
Can I have California?
No, you can't have the fucking country-sized state. You get North Dakota, right? No, okay, sure. You can have California, right?
At least not like Utah or something.
Yeah. You can limit that, and there's still so much that's going on, right? And so I've had this past year where I've been laser focused on all this you know, Canadian stuff, and in a lot of cases underground Canadian stuff. But I came out of it, and I'm like I don't feel like I'm not left wanting. I didn't pay a lot of attention this past year to say, I don't know, the Fat Wreck releases, right? To speak no ill of Fat Wreck. I love those people. But I didn't pay a whole lot of attention to what was going on there. Again, just because I didn't have time to, given everything else that I was doing. And I'm not feeling oh shit, I didn't hear the Western Addiction record. What am I going to do? I got to get on that. How am I going to slot that in? Right. I feel that a little bit, but I'm trying to break away from that. Just you have to hear everything. You have to be into everything. You have to like experience everything sense that you get, like being one of these like borderless internet music people. So me going and like limiting myself purposefully has been sort of interesting from that standpoint. So, but like, I don't know if that sense where there's too much stuff, you know, affects why you would go and not listen very much to, say, like the new Rancid record or new Bouncing Souls record or something like that. Just because, like, in my head mentally, I'm like, you know, yeah, I've been on that roller coaster, check, right? Like, I don't want to, if I keep going back on that roller coaster, then I don't get to go on these rides that I've never been on. And that's, you know, that's not a straight metaphor or anything, but like that's kind of what it feels like, isn't it?
Well, listen, we've got a bunch more letters, but we'll save most of them till next week. You can reach us at podcast@punknews.org. I want to read one last one here. Here's the last one, and we'll save some more for next week. You can reach us at podcast@punknews.org. Top of the morning to ye. If you ask myself, punk rock has too many lasses in 2017. Where will all we lads get our rocks off with aggressive music, a blighty? Lasses just can't make good music. They're taking a piss out of me, they is. Love you, podcast, Aaron Go Bra. And that's from Paul H. I don't agree with Paul H, but that's what he says.
Whenever I hear you take four or five controversial accents and just make them into some sort of horrible chimera that should just be brought out and shot, just warms my heart, John. I realize that I soaked up all of the time on that last record by ranting like a maniac. If you have another letter that you really want to read, by all means do it.
No, we can save that. We got some other stuff to cover.
Adam, the worst thing is, Adam, I mean, let me say succinctly what you took a half hour to say. Because I primarily agree with you. If I have a choice between a good local or a good Detroit or a good Grand Rapids band or a big Rancid release, you're right. I'm going to spend my time listening to the local or the Detroit band that's more compelling than.
Well, that's because it's better than Rancid. You know what I mean?
It's more compelling than, because at least Rancid, you know, unless, I don't know, I don't think I'll ever be in a place where Rancid can make a record that will impress me like that again. You know, that first album, And Out Come the Wolves, you know, it just happened at a certain time in my life. I'll never be at that point in my life again. They'll never make an album that has an impact on me like that. So, you keep doing your Canadian thing, Adam.
I don't think my Canadian thing is necessarily too different than, like, your Grand Rapids thing.
You and I have had this conversation repeatedly about how it's, I don't think there's anything wrong with us being territorial because we live in these sort of underrepresented areas, you know?
I feel like I have like a fantasy football Rancid record in my head that like if I went and put on a new Rancid record and it started playing the first few notes of this one that exists purely in my mind, I would just lose my shit.
You just know it was.
I'm like, they've done it. Like they've made a record that is like this hybrid of like Life Won't Wait and Rancid 2000. And there's no, you know, there's no goofiness and. Oh, that's what I want. It's not going
to
happen.
Meanwhile, here we are devoting all this time to Rancid. All right.
Well, that's what the guy wanted. He's like, talk more about Rancid. We're doing it.
I want Rancid 5, but with like 4 or 5, like really weird, just whacked out noise, like recordings, like in between it. So like Rancid 5, but like crazier. That's what I want.
Yeah. I mean, you and I, John, are huge Rancid. Are we calling it Rancid 5 or Rancid 2000? I've always called it.
Take your pick. Either way, that album kicks ass and does not get enough credit within the Rancid discography.
I want to say I reviewed that record and gave it 5 stars. I don't know that I was huge on that record. I feel like I still am. I have a lot of goodwill for that record. But I think partly my displeasure with Rancid is that they backed off from that.
They were on
Life Won't Wait was kind of a weird record, but in a good way. You know, it was shades weirder than Out Come the Wolves, and Out Come the Wolves was one of these things that like was like a perfect rock and roll record. Like you can't, there's no improvement on that record. It might be a little long. That's all I can give it. But like it is a perfect record. So then
you gave it 4.5 stars, Adam.
So then you go from Out Come the Wolves, which is like a in the genre perfect record. And then like you can't do that again because it's going to make it tired. Like if they made Out Come the Wolves 4 times, then it would be like a Pennywise thing where everyone's like, oh yeah, okay, bro him again, here we go, right? Like it would be, everyone would be like, oh, we heard it, right? So Life Won't Wait gets
I think it's been long enough now, we could live with it.
Yeah. So Life Won't Wait gets weird, but on the reggae end of things, right? And they do that by having, like, you know, Vic Ruggiero and Buju Banton and all these people involved, and that's fine. And then, you know, Rancid 5 was so fucking aggressive and just, and it sheds all that and goes just nuts, right? And it sounds like a fucking Black Flag record at times, and that's great. And then you go from this, like, we keep climbing and we keep getting more unpredictable and crazy and weird, and then we end up with like two or three records in a row that all sound like the greatest hits collection, and that's not what I want. So,
man,
I'm just giving the people what they want, John. They want me to talk about Rancid. At least that letter writer did, and that's the only person that I've got feedback from today. So that is the people.
Well, I'm going to give the people what they want. This is a track by a band called Quam, Q-W-A-M, and I just discovered this band. They've got two EPs out, or one's coming out. I'm going to play something from their old EP, three tracks. I am loving this EP. It's the EP is called Queen with a Microphone, and it's kind of like Avengers meets Flipper meets just craziness. This track is called Pedal to the Metal. you're sick of this. I think this is getting more and more interesting and is perhaps achieving high anti-art. Well, I think you should. Listen, we're all adults here. We all know when people we all know when people in charge are not giving us the full story and are giving us a highly slanted story that is easily disproven, but the person doesn't care that it's easily disproven just because through sheer willpower they act like it's not easily disproven and for some reason it doesn't negatively affect them at all. We're all adults and can see right through that, Adam. So by all means, slant away.
People would know now. Mean Jeans have released jingles over the past little while for Totino's Pizza, DiGiorno Pizza, Mountain Dew, which, John, you spelt wrong in the story, and you wrote Mountain Dew.
Good thing I didn't write this story, Adam. Ooh.
Posted by John Gentile. Yes, you did. And Coors Light.
I didn't write this story. No, I didn't.
I'm just telling you what I'm seeing here on Pumpkin.
Let me take a look at posted by John Gentile, but submitted by someone else. So I did miss.
Anyways, so yeah, well, it turns out the band has actually written 23 jingles for various products and services.
Oh, no, actually, Adam, Ricky misspelled it because a new submitter submitted this, but I actually used Ricky's text. So there's three people to blame.
I blame Ricky most of all. Anyway, so they wrote 23 jingles for various products ranging from Taco Bell to Best Western to Capri Sun and all this kind of stuff. And all that's going on, it's going on a record. It's going on a full length. The record is titled The Jingles Collection. It's due out on February 16th on Fat Records. You can find the full track listing over on Punk News. It is 23 songs long. There's a lot of stuff about, I think, like the kind of food that you would have eaten as a middle schooler. So that's definitely, I think, where their heads were when they put this together. There's a song about Dunkaroos. There's a song about Hot Pockets. There's a song about
Totino's, those delicious tiny little pizzas.
Yeah. So, okay, John, here's my dumb opinion here. I looked at this and I thought that, like, this was funny initially, and now it's not, and I don't know if I want to listen to this, but the one thing here that has me hooked, that I really want to see, is there's
1-800-69 Shred.
Yes, there's a song on here called 1-800-69 Shred. Now, which is the phone number for, like, I don't know, like Shreddit, I assume, for one of these companies that, like, provide shredding services for businesses. And I am fascinated by that. That has hooked me. I don't want to hear them sing about fucking Dunkaroos. I don't care. But I want to hear them sing about the shredding company. Deconstruct that. Why is that?
Well, because it's 69. I don't know if that's real, Adam. 1-800-69 Shred. I mean, there's two jokes going on in there. what I do like about this is some of the more, I guess, edgy products or boring products that they're promoting. Camel Lights, Skull, but also Rain X Wiper Blades, Best Western. I find that to be hilarious. Selsun Blue. I find that to be hilarious. I think this whole project is actually very interesting. Adam said that he's not going to want to listen to this over and over and over. I don't subscribe to the theory that an album is good only on the merits that if you want to do it over and over and over again. A lot of interesting groups, Crass, Chumbawamba, make records that aren't meant to be listened to over and over and over. They're challenging artistic experiences that if you make it through and if you can understand, you are at least enlightened to a certain degree. Not to be too art school or too, you know, what's what I'm looking for, a graduate student over this, but I do think this is pretty, first of all, I think it's funny off the bat, but secondly, I think it is interesting because usually we see commercials co-opting art in order to sell the item of the commercial. You know, the most famous one, well, not the most famous, but one of the most famous ones was Cadillac using Iggy Pop, and Iggy Pop got a whole bunch of, you know, blowback from using Lust for Life in a Cadillac commercial. And of course, it passed over everybody's head that the song is about being strung out on heroin. The point being here is it's Mean Gene's subverting that. They're taking commercials and using that commercial to build art. And it almost is like taking the power away from the commercial and using it to their own ends. Now, you can look at that and saying, this is how pervasive commercialism is that we can't think for ourselves. And even our very art is built from commercials, which means that's how deeply they are ingrained in our consciousness and how deeply they control us. Or you can view it as a band taking something from a corporation and perverting it to their own ends for their own amusement and for their own financial gain. And I think that's what makes this interesting. Which is it? I think it's probably the latter. Well, I don't even know if there's a whole grand scheme behind this. I think it's just a funny thing. But I think the end effect is probably the latter. I don't think, you know, Rain X Wiper Blades is going to sell any more Wiper Blades because of this thing. And I think it's hilarious and I think it's funny. I don't think I would listen to it over and over and over, but I would definitely be interested to hear to see what they do with it and what the end result is.
Hmm. Don't you think they should have called it Jingles Going Steady?
I think they should have called it Jingles, which one of the staff commenters wrote. Jingles.
Oh, Jingles.
That's pretty funny.
But I like Jingles Going Steady. And then you get the classic punk reference. Yeah, I don't. I would listen to this once probably, but that would be about it. It kind of reminded me. I was the Who did an album like in the '60s, mid late '60s called The Who Sell Out, and they had a bunch of like fake commercials in it. I don't know. So they certainly aren't the first to come up with this kind of a concept, but I don't know. I'm kind of torn on it.
The cover.
I generally think I probably won't get a bunch of enjoyment out of it.
The cover to The Who Sell Out is so gross to me.
Yes, it's the grossest cover there is.
It is the gross. Oh. I mean, like.
But you know that was 50 years ago, and you know they were starting to, you know, they were poking fun at the relationship between the artist and the, you know,
like
commercialization of the artist.
If I'm not incorrect, is this the one with like Pete Townsend is sitting in like a bathtub full of baked beans?
No, I think Daltrey's in the
baked. Or is it Daltrey? I don't know.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, Townsend's putting like this deodorant.
Right. Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
You know, too bad that it isn't Townsend in the baked beans, because knowing what we know about him now, it could have just been him like using art as an excuse to get off on some weird fetish that he has. Man, you're talking about a creepy guy.
Anyway,
Townsend.
Allegedly.
He's allegedly creepy.
I wonder what he thinks about the future of rock and roll and if there's too many people involved who he is. Anyways,
I think he's too busy using like those internet services where you can't get tracked. I think he's too busy.
He's doing that for research, John. Research. All right. I want to jump into this next one here because I'm gonna say something that people are gonna think is totally nuts. In an Instagram post by the Distillers lead singer, Brody, is it Brody Dahl or Dale? Is it Dahl?
I believe it's Dahl, but now actually I think she doesn't even go by Brody. She goes by Dodie Hom, Brody Hom now.
Oh, see, that's even worse because I'm never sure if I should call him Hom or Hommy. There's someone on the radio that calls him Josh Hommy.
Call him Dickbag. That's what you should call him.
Oh, I'm never sure. Anyways, so in a recent Instagram post, Distillers lead singer, Brody, whatever you want to call her, she alluded that they were reuniting. She posted like a short clip that was possibly from an upcoming music video with the caption, "The Distillers 2018. And well, no one is really sure what that meant. The band's last active year was in 2006. And the band has now announced their first reunion show. They're going to be playing at the Shaky Knee Festival in Atlanta this May. And sort of where it goes from there, no one particularly knows. So I am actually unusually excited about this. Because while what the Distillers did while they were on Hellcat Records was not incredibly interesting to me, although I didn't dislike it, I think that Coral Fang, which is the record that they released on Sire, was it Sire? Yeah, it was on Sire. The record that they released on Sire, like their one major label record before they broke up, is really fucking good. Is like unusually good, that no one gave it credit for being good. It's great. And I'm kind of excited to see them come back and do stuff because I think that band was actually getting like kind of interesting and awesome. So I'm down with that. But
see, I thought the first two records were good. The first two records were good, Adam. I think they were. I don't know. I didn't think Coral Fang is really good too, but I thought they were all. I thought the first two were both.
No, really they didn't have a problem with them or anything like that. But they didn't like. They were. I mean, like they were. They were fine.
Hellcat band.
Like it was
if you want to be
serviceable punk rock to me, but like Coral Fang for whatever reason, like maybe it's like the point in my life when I heard it or whatever that was just like it captivated me. It like stole my brain.
I think let's be real about what they were. Musically, they were decent punk rock. Her voice made the music. That's all there was to it. She has one of the great female I can't say I'm like the world's biggest Distillers fan, but I think she has one of the greatest voices. I look forward to this. I never got to see him. I would check him out. Should I have the opportunity? I'm not going to this freaking Shake Your Hips Fest, but, you know.
So
watching Jack White and some other bullshit, but, you know, I'd like to see them.
We're making a lot of enemies this episode. Bonner,
so it's all hot. In the spirit of making enemies, here you go. I am. This got more of a reaction out of me than this story, which is that Jawbreaker has announced a whole bunch of shows. So they're going to be playing a bunch of stuff in 2018. They're going to be playing in San Francisco for a couple nights, 3 nights in New York City, 2 dates in LA, all with different openers and different bands involved. Like Charlie Bliss at one of the ones in New York, Waxahachie and at the two in LA, playing with a bunch of comedians opening for them when they're in New York too. So, you know, a bunch of interesting kind of shows that they're putting together. So people are super stoked. They're making their travel plans. They're talking about this nonstop on the various internets that I'm involved in. But I saw this and I went like, all right. But I'm like, I guess I would consider myself a Jawbreaker fan, but apparently I'm not, because I'm like, there was no way that I was like, I'm going to New York in February. Like that just wasn't going to happen. But like the Distillers thing, I was like, oh man, I really hope they get back together. So yeah, I don't know what's wrong with me. I'm broken.
You grew some taste buds. That's what happened.
I'm not trying to slag on Jawbreaker or anything, but like that was my honest reaction to this. It was like Jawbreaker's playing more shows, and I went, "Oh, well, I figured they would."
My reaction, you know, I'm sorry. The Jawbreaker thing to me is I am thrilled for the people that are thrilled, but I couldn't care less. You know what I mean? If it was, there's bands that I love that other people don't give a rat's ass about, and you know, I'm happy for the people who do. That they, you know, it's one of those bands they haven't played for 20 years. People are getting a chance to see them that never did, and they're not extremely diminished. You know, they don't have Michael Graves on lead vocals or something. So I'm happy for people. I just don't care.
I could be wrong about this, but I always wonder if this is Emperor's New Clothes finally being exposed. Like, I'm not going to name names, but, you know, from like 2010 to 2013, 2014, there were certain bands at Punk News and some of people were like, oh, they're so great, they're so great. And like, I even went to some of these shows because people were like, oh, I can't wait for band XYZ show. And I would go and people would just like stand there and like clap and like walk out and like not even really talk about the show afterwards. Whereas if you go see Off, if you go see Slayer back in the day, if you go see Melvins, if you go see like people, like, holy shit, I can't believe they did that. I can't believe they did that. You know, and then with Jawbreaker, Jawbreaker is like a legendary band in punk rock, if you will. People are always talking about them. They played a couple of live shows and it seemed like people forgot about it as soon as they played it. So I wonder if like, you know, people aren't like few people are really big Jawbreaker fans as they say they are. And it's really people just realizing that what they all thought was that great isn't that great. Or maybe just Jawbreaker isn't a live kind of band. Like maybe Jawbreaker is a kind of band that you listen to by yourself when you know, when it's in a slow, relaxing music about how you feel. And it's not really meant to be shared in a live or even a group experience. It could be that too.
John, are you projecting a little bit? You can't get into the heads of the people that were at those shows that they were at. They might still be buzzing away. Who knows?
All I'm saying, when Amoebics reunited, there was shit all over the internet. When Steve Vignor was doing Crash songs in 2012, there was stuff all over the internet afterwards, for weeks and months afterwards. Jawbreaker, this is like a reunion no one ever thought would happen. When Flag reunited, people were still talking about the Flag versus Black Flag battle 4 or 5 years later. When Jawbreaker reunited, this is a band people talk about with hushed tones for like 20 years. It happened and no one gave a shit. You know what I mean?
Well, we all live in bubbles to a certain extent, John. I don't know that it's that much different than... I don't know that that's true, because I did see a lot of Jawbreaker buzz going around.
Before the show, not before, after the show.
And during. No, even after. But like I said, we surround ourselves with like-minded individuals, you know?
I hate everybody on this podcast.
Like when Lemmy died, John? Remember when Lemmy died? Like, I knew that my friends and I all had similar tastes, because literally, like, I would go on social media, like my Facebook feed, it was 98% Lemmy shit.
You know why? Because Lemmy was great. No one cares about Jawbreaker because they're not that great.
Well, listen, it's not for us. I mean, like I said, I feel the same way about Jawbreaker. It doesn't do anything for me. But
now they're not terrible. Like I said, but
it's cool to, you know, it'd be like, I don't know, this probably isn't a fair assessment because Misfits are way more important in the bigger punk picture. But, you know, if the Misfits finally did tour, played Detroit, played Philly, and we got to see them in a 1,000 or 2,000 seat theater with Danzig, yeah, that would be pretty cool, you know. And I would hope that other people who, even if they don't give a shit about the Misfits, would think it was cool. And that's, like I said, that's the way I feel about this Jawbreaker.
Well, thing. I got bad news for you, Tom. I cannot confirm anything, but inside sources say odds do not look good. Unfortunately,
that's all right. I probably couldn't afford it anyway. I was gonna say maybe Jawbreaker. You're not hearing so much about Jawbreakers because their fans are still like broke 35-year-olds living with their parents and can't afford to travel to see the band play.
Well, maybe no one cares about Jawbreaker, but here's a band everyone cares about. So,
Motorhead?
No, well, I was going to seg into this next story, but now I'm worried that it was an inappropriate seg.
It's not Motorhead?
So last week, the charges related to kidnapping and rape that were filed against members of the Polish death metal band Decapitated were dropped at the request of a prosecutor. Trial was expected to begin, it would have been 11 days from when that story was run, so, you know, I guess in 4 or 5 days from
next
now.
Next week?
Yeah, next week. So the Spokane County prosecutor, Kelly Fitzgerald, filed a motion that cites that the reason for the dismissal was the well-being of the victim, quote, and, quote, in the interest of justice, quote, as a reason for dismissal. Later, Fitzgerald stated, "This has been traumatizing to the victim. It's obviously something that is a multiple defender case, and it would be a lengthy trial." So, the attorney for the band, a guy named Jeffrey Finer, he stated, "A close review of the evidence is all it took. We're not criticizing the county for moving slow. It just took a long time to get all the evidence, all of the witnesses, and there were so many witnesses." And that's the end of the quote that we ran. You can read the full report with a link over at Punk News. Go look up that story. John, as someone who... I'm not a legal person, so the things that were said here, I don't understand.
Fair enough.
So they decided, like, I'm reading this as this would have been difficult and it would suck, so we're not going to try it.
The answer is we will never know what actually happened. One of the following three things happened. The prosecutor can't just say, well, we don't think there's enough evidence, so we're going to dismiss it, because the prosecutor was supposed to make that choice before deciding to prosecute, either before the grand jury made their decision, or immediately after the grand jury made their decision. So if the prosecutor went forward and said, well, we don't have enough evidence, we're dropping it, then that would mean they'd be opening themselves up to a civil action. If the prosecutor said, after uncovering more evidence, we've decided there's not a case and we want a dismissal, that'd be a different case. However, that's not the case here at all. Here, one of three things is happening. First, the prosecutor basically said that this is going to be very difficult on the victim, and so we're going to drop it because we don't want to put any more damage to the victim. So what could be happening is the prosecutor saying, this woman was gang raped, and a trial is only going to make her life that much worse, because when she gets on the stand, they're going to bring back her entire past sexual history. They're going to bring back the fact that she lied to the police in 2014, and they're basically going to try to destroy her in court. She doesn't want to go through with it, so we're going to drop it for her well-being. It could also be that we're the prosecution. We think that maybe it's not true what they're alleging, but we can't say that because we can't turn on our own client, which is the state. And so we're going to dismiss it under the guise that it would be damaging to the victim, or it could be what you said, is like, this case is going to be really long and messy, and it might make us look bad because we might lose the case in the long run, so we're just going to dismiss it on those counts. I think after some pretrial depositions, I think the victim got scared because she didn't want her entire past sexual history and that kind of stuff brought up, you know, in nationally and internationally, which is a brutal thing to do. And so it raises the question, is how can we improve the legal system and the protection and helping of people that have been sexually assaulted? And the other contrasting weight is, it's rare, it's very rare, but sometimes people do lie about this kind of thing. So it's a difficult balance, if you will, to sort out how do we protect, you know, the sexual victims and not make trial even more damaging for them. But we need some kind of safety mechanism against the very small percentage of people that do lie about these kinds of things. And I don't know if there's an answer for that. And we're a long ways away from getting to that answer.
John, I don't know how we would cope with any of these stories without you here. Tom, you got anything to add to this ongoing saga of horribleness?
Couple that sneeze up. You know, I really don't. I've been following it, you know, just out of interest. I never have listened to Decapitated. I don't really know anything about them. They're from Poland. They're a death metal band. I'm not really a death metal guy. But it was very interesting. I kind of felt from the beginning that it was not going to be very open and shut. Unfortunately, nobody knows what goes on or what happened on that bus. And, you know, I read a lot of comments from like these other like black metal bands and stuff. And they're like, of course they're innocent. These guys in Decapitated are the finest, most upstanding citizens you'll ever meet. And then people on the other side are reactionary, like, well, they did it. It just, they can't prove it or they can't prosecute it. I don't know. Maybe they did do it. Maybe they did. I don't know. We've become kind of, you know, sexual assault is a weird crime in that if you get accused of murder and you're not prosecuted for it, they won't continue to call you a murderer, like, unless you're OJ. But with sexual assault, it's like the accusation is enough to kind of taint you for life. And I understand why that is, because it wasn't treated, hasn't been treated seriously enough for years and years. So I kind of get the overreaction, but by the same token, you know, accusing someone of this is really a stain that stays with you for life. So anyway, but I don't know what the situation is with this. I don't know. I doubt they're upstanding citizens, and I doubt she's an upstanding citizen. Now, that doesn't mean she should have been assaulted by any stretch of imagination, but I just don't know, dudes. I don't know. We'll never know.
I will say this is, and I don't mean this from a moral standpoint, I'll mean this from a practical, realistic standpoint, is if you're a girl, and it's sad, but it's true, you probably shouldn't get on a band bus. And I'm not saying you shouldn't and it's your fault, because it definitely is not. But the reality is that can be a very dangerous place to be. So you probably want to think twice before doing that. I hope I said that correctly. I'm not saying moral blame, and I'm not saying what you're doing is wrong. I think you should be able to get on a band bus if you're a girl. But the reality is you probably shouldn't.
I think that really we should to be safe, we should just get rid of Poland.
I'm thinking of some guy from about 70 years ago that said the same thing, but
yeah. Well, you know, those Canadians, they're big into genocide. That's kind of their thing.
This podcast is going horrible. Someone plays to get us out of this.
I had to get rid of your possibly problematic advice to women by invoking.
Well, it's not problematic. what I'm saying.
Well, it's gonna irritate some people. I mean, I get from a practical standpoint what you're saying, but I know it will irritate some people that will say, you know, it doesn't make it right, and it doesn't make it right. I know you're not saying that, John.
Yeah,
but like I said, it'll still irritate some people.
I'm saying there's nothing that can't happen off the bus that can happen on the bus that's okay. You know what I mean? Like anything that's okay to happen on the bus can happen off the bus. You know, that's what I'm saying. So that's what I'm saying. Erase this podcast. Let's burn it and move on.
There is no good way. Handle or get out of these stories. So anyways,
I was going to play a Decapitated song too. No. No, I wasn't.
That's the news. Tom, do you want to play a song so we don't have to talk about the story anymore?
Yeah, I don't mind playing a song. A couple weeks ago, towards the end of 2017, I went to an event in Detroit called Black Christmas, which is a really amazing event. It was the first time I was able to get to it. It's like the annual holiday party. It's like Suicide Machines' annual holiday party. Suicide Machines are the big headliner, but this year it was Suicide Machines, Negative Approach, Bad Cop, Direct Hit, Squirt Gun, blah, blah, blah. Anyway, there was tons of great bands. But the band, the Michigan band that I got to see that I had never seen, is a Detroit band called Cold as Life. And I'm not sure how authentic they are at this point. I know the original singer from the late 80s is dead. And I know at least one other key member from that era is dead. But they are still one of these like scary hardcore bands, and it was one of the most brutal things I've ever seen, but it was really good. I am going to play their new single. Just came out last year. They put out a new 7-inch. So this is Cold as Life, and the song is called Suffer.
Back. That was Suffer by Cold as Life. John, grab the next story here. You do it.
Okay. Yeah. Listen, people are always talking about Elon Musk and Bitcoins and stuff. But listen, I'm the new up and coming hot kid on the street when it comes to investment.
Is it fair to call you a mogul in that small department,
Jeff? Oh, I'm a mogul. So listen, cassette sales were historically high in 2017 compared to the last 20 years. In 2017, 174,000 new cassette tapes were sold compared to 129,000 in 2016, which of course was an increase over 2015 and so forth, going all the way back to a decline which started in 1991, I believe. However, 22% of those 174,000 tapes were simply the Guardians of the Galaxy soundtrack on tape, because that was kind of a thing from the movie. However, Punk News contributed to the zeitgeist through my cassette label, Norma Records. We released no fewer than 5 cassette tapes in the 2017 year. However, Burger Records, who I believe is the world's highest selling company of independent cassette tapes, released over 100 different tapes in 2017. So listen, boys, the trend is continuing, and invest all your money in cassette tapes, because I only see this trend continuing for decades to come.
I did not realize that Burger was such a big factor in this. I always underestimate how big a label in some ways Burger is, because I feel like you, John, were my main vector into Burger. Like you're really into a lot of their stuff, and I keep running into bands that I know that have released something on Burger, and a lot of the times it's a tape. So wow, that's interesting to me.
Well, listen. Oh, I meant to point this out. Listen, we made a cassette tape for the Punk News Holiday Spectacular. It's got an exclusive track by Cassie Ramone and 2 other tracks. 2 exclusive tracks by Colleen Green, 3 exclusive tracks from Joe Jack Talcum, including one which might be the first song he ever recorded ever back in 1979, an exclusive track by Push Into the Limit, an exclusive track by Posers, and an exclusive track by Crazy in the Brains. It was only available at the gig, but because you Punk News Podcast listeners are loyal listeners, if you go to my website, narmarecords.com, there might be a very limited quantity. When I say very limited, I mean about 4 or 5 that you can purchase online if you want to get it, narmarecords.com.
I mean, I've got a really good idea about why the cassette thing is taking off, and I don't blame hipsters as much as the universe seems to blame hipsters for this. There was someone today that I know that is in, you know, they're not a nationally well-known musician or anything like that, but in the circles that I tend to run in Canadian rock and roll, they're a person that people would know. And they went online today, and they just asked, they said, this was 6 hours ago, they said, what's the most punk rock merch now that making records is totally unreachable? Just making nothing? And that impression that, you know, like vinyl is great and everything, but actually like getting it pressed and in the hands is so out of the price range of so many small bands and everything like that, that like that's why there's fucking cassettes right now. I just looked, I went on to eBay. I can get a cassette duplicator on eBay, a John Gentile style cassette duplicator. And I've seen John's cassette duplicators. They are big, angry beasts of machines here. You know, I can go get one on fucking eBay for $34 right now. $49. Like if you want to be able to go and make cassettes and press them as a means of having something to sell for your band, even if that cassette tape is basically a means of conveyance for you to give someone a download code that is a little bit more interesting than you giving them a fucking business card that has a download code on it. It, you know, it's way more cost effective than the other options.
Sony CCP 1300. Oh yeah.
CDs are still cheaper, aren't they?
No.
Surprisingly, they are not. Made CDs for like $1.25 a piece.
Cassette tapes you can get less than that if you make them yourself. And see, I mean, I've told this before, but I'll say it again. CDs are probably, if I had to pick CDs, they're probably my favorite. But cassette tapes are so cool because they're extremely cheap. You can make them sound very good pretty easily. With a duplicator, you can make a professional quality tape yourself. You can get up to 120 minutes on it. And I guess the coolest thing is, like, for the Holiday Spectacular mixtape, I didn't have my assets till Monday. That is, my cassette tape, like, the stuff I needed, it the recordings weren't done till Monday. So yeah, like the last person recorded on Sunday night. I had a physical product, professional looking physical product in my hand by Friday evening. How about Thursday evening, technically. That's pretty cool. Like, you can have a professional item within 4 days in your hands.
It's, yeah. You know, and I have not jumped on the cassette bandwagon, and I don't intend to. But, and it's funny, because sales have soared. Whether I don't know, 70. In 2016, they went up 74%. In 2017, I can't remember what the percentage was. But the fact of the matter is, it's, you know, less than 200,000. Literally, the total cassette sales of the year are less than 1/6 of what Taylor Swift did in CDs. I mean, it's still, you know what I mean? It's still a niche. It's still a niche mark, but it's cool. Get into it. If you guys are into it, that's cool. I'm just not.
I think I'm more conceptually into it than I am, really. I only say this because from where I am sitting, I can see the tape deck that I stole from my parents' basement. My parents, I think, like most middle-aged kind of boomers, at one point bought a 5-point surround sound system for their house because that was a thing for a while. Like, everyone had fucking surround sound systems all the time. And you would get one of those sets where that would all connect back to, you would have like a CD changer, and then you would have your actual like stereo, and then in my parents' case, they had a record player piece, and then they had like a tape deck that had like a couple tape decks in it, and you could connect chain all these things together, and they would sit in this giant, you know, horrible piece of furniture, like room wide cabinet thing that was like built into the back of their living room. And that's where all the stereo stuff lived. Right. And then over the years, it slowly like leaves falling off a plant, like pieces of it vanished. So at some point, the surround sound system frustrated them and they just stopped using it. And this was just using the TV, and the record player went really early because they didn't need that part. And the CD changer, like, it died because it's just like a bunch of moving parts and all the mechanics in it was like started making like horrible grinding noises after a while. And the tape deck was just like unceremoniously just like socked into the basement, you know, really early on. So I went over to their house not too long ago and I was like, Gentili's making tapes. I need a fucking tape player. And I stole this dust covered beast out of, you know, it was basically like holding up part of the house. And they all looked at me like I was nuts that I wanted this garbage for any reason other than to fill a hole. But I brought it home and put it in my office here, and it's not connected to anything. It's it's on a shelf. It looks cool. It is not. There are no audio output devices that are wired into it right now, and I have not had the sudden influx of free time where I've decided that that's going to be a project of mine. So, I mean, I guess I'm better than most when it comes to being a cassette fan, but I'm not quite there.
I hear your question. When's the bottom going to drop out on this? Will 2018 be the year it drops out? Will it be a slow fade away?
The fact of the matter is, it's still that I don't so think there's a small. Bottom? I think it can still grow.
No, actually, I kind of agree. I think maybe cassettes are here to stay.
No, as long as the prison industrial complex is roaring along in the States, there's going to be people making cassettes.
Very true. Very true.
Because they're you know, you were buying fucking prison cassettes, weren't you?
Well, my cassettes were not prison cassettes because they're more expensive, but I bought my cassettes from I believe the only company in America, or one of the only companies in America, that makes cassettes which are allowed in prisons because CDs are not.
Yeah, I don't know if people are aware of this, but like, there is a fairly good business selling cassette tapes to prisons because it's way too easy to take a CD and make it into two cool-looking knives. So,
hell yeah, Shiv.
Yeah, so if you want music in prison, you are using a fucking tape. So they make tapes, and the prison tapes, it's like, do they have like no metal? Like, there's no screws in them?
There's no screws in them, and actually the plastic is actually a little bit thinner, and also the tape is different. So I'm not even joking. So you can't, like, hang yourself or something like that.
Yeah, so tapes keep roaring along, at least as a medium, because of their use in prisons, right? So tapes are going to exist. People keep making these with just like these. I'm just, you know, with all this old fucking duplicator junk that you get on eBay, like that stuff will just float around for a number of years. Where I see tapes the most these days are like the shittiest, and by shitty I mean great, like lo-fi fucking punk band that's gonna come play like just this like ear-bleedingly loud fuzzy music. And they're undoubtedly selling tapes after their show. I can't look at that band and say, oh, you guys are in a speculative bubble. Like, that fucking band doesn't make any money. There's no bubble around them. They're a bunch of bozos in a van that pulled up and, like, hopefully they're going to make, like, $12 playing this show so that they can, like, I don't know, go buy a Coke and then go to the next show, right? Like, there's no bubble to that. Right. I'd be way more worried, even though I love vinyl, about the vinyl thing being a bubble, if for no other reason than there's like serious money that's going into, you know, the building of plants and the upgrading of plants and all that stuff. Like, they're selling, you know, more cassettes these days than they were. But, you know, there's not. No one's buying stock in the tape universe.
I said I'm not into it. I'm not into it at all. I haven't bought into it. But let me tell you something. I think there's plenty of room for growth. It's still such a tiny, tiny fraction of the overall units being moved. I think it could hit a million again. That's what I'm going to say.
All right.
I think it's a growth industry. I think Narmer Records might be a better investment than Bitcoin at this point. John, I want in.
You, I'll take your money.
Listen, you know what happened? You know what happened? You get big enough, Burger will buy you out. Like, the only way we're going to get to 200 releases a year is if we start buying up some of these smaller tape labels.
70, front page New York Times, Narmer Records sells for 75. 75 million? 75 billion? No, $75.
And that includes your duplication machine. Includes all assets.
But listen, baby, you 300 cassettes, you can make that for about $325-$350. 300 records, you're looking at about $4,000 or $5,000. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Yeah. John, I don't have the stories open anymore. So what else are we talking about in this show?
Let's blast through two quickies here. This is the cool thing to look forward to. Nightbirds are on hiatus right now because at least one of the Nightbirds is having a kid, and maybe two of the Nightbirds are having a kid. So Brian Gorsek, the Nightbird singer, has started a new band. The band is him on drums, Evan Keel, a Forward to Death on bass, and of course, Tom and Adam. What's the relationship between Forward to Death and Nightbirds?
I don't know that answer.
Brian Gorsegner was also on Forward to Death. The singer and guitarist of Nightbirds, this should get excited a lot of punk news listeners, is Jeff Schrock of the Ergs, one of the singer of the Ergs. So it's one third Ergs, two thirds Nightbirds or Nightbirds related, which sounds interesting. Who knows what we're going to get? I'm definitely more a fan of Nightbirds than Ergs. I like the harder, crazier stuff, but who knows what we're going to get out of this? It is definitely a New Jersey band. And sounds interesting to me, and I would definitely be checking this out.
If there's anything like Nightbirds, I'm down. Sure. Nightbirds is great.
I like that. I like his voice a lot. I would definitely check it out.
Last story of the week, Penny Rimbaud has released a new album. It's him just reading Wilfred Owen's poems. Do you guys know who Wilfred Owen is?
Some old guy.
Wilfred Owen is actually a very interesting person. He basically wrote poetry about the war during World War I and World War II. I believe he was in World War I. His poetry is surprisingly gruesome and surprisingly dour and surprisingly explicit. Explicit in the term gruesomely detailed, if you will. And so it's fitting for Penny Rimbaud to read that. Penny Rimbaud at this point is like 76, 77. He's still doing interesting projects. On the release, he's backed by a piano and I believe a cello. An interesting thing that no one else picked up on. Do you guys know the relationship, or I guess the interesting bit about Penny Rimbaud doing Wilfred Owen's poetry?
John, we don't know the answers to these questions you keep asking. No, what is it?
The last The last official track by Rudimentary Peni was Wilfred Henry Owen's The Chances, which is Nick Blinko reading the poetry of Wilfred Owen. Of course, Rudimentary Peni ostensibly got their start by Crass. So I don't know if there's a connection there or just a coincidence, but I do think it's very interesting that kind of two of the three anarcho champions, you know, Crass, Rudimentary Peni, and Mebix, are doing Wilfred Owen poems. It makes sense because it's very anti-war, if you will, but it's anti-war from the perspective of having been in the war and seeing gruesome stuff. And so Penny Rambow, he's always doing interesting stuff. Some of it has more lasting appeal than others, but man, I'm just glad Penny Rambow is doing stuff. He's the man. This is interesting, at least. Worth a listen.
I'm all for cool little projects and things like that. I don't begrudge this. I'm not sure at one of these things who the exact audience is for something like this, but on the other hand, it seems like a project that you don't undertake because you're too cared about who the audience is. So
right.
So yay, you know, all the power to Penny Rambow.
I think this is much like that Mean Jeans project. I think I'm only good to listen to it once after listening to the sample. It might be kind of interesting, but I don't think this is something you're like, oh, I don't know what I'm going to get home from work. I'm going to listen to some Pink Lincolns, some Screeching Weasel, and a little Penny Rambald reading melancholy poetry over melancholy piano music with cello.
I imagine Tom Trom and his friends are like, yeah, let's go to see the meat man. Yeah, let's get in the car and rock out. You know, they get in the car, they turn on, they crank it up, you know, the engine's roaring. What do you got? Let's pop this in. And it's Penny Rambow read about the horrors of war everywhere.
All right, I'm going to play one more song and then we'll get out of here. You know what? We can just finish it with this because it's been a long show. So speaking of tapes, here's one for you. So there's a band out of Halifax. They're called the Mark Vodka Group. I am slightly suspicious that these guys might be involved with the Bougie Boys, that are one of my favorite bands right now, but I don't have any particular evidence or proof of that outside of the fact that Cody Gugu from the Bougies were pushing this. So anyways, the Mark Vodka...
Wait, I got to pause you. You know who else is a gigantic Bougie Boys fan?
Who's that?
Iggy Pop. You got good taste.
Of course. Iggy comes to me all the time to ask about about what he should listen to. So anyways, the Mark Vodka Group, they've released a four-song cassette. It is a single, I guess you'd call it, which is called the...
Because singles were pretty sweet. They didn't even have like regular paper. They didn't even have like regular plastic cases. They had like a cardboard slip cover case.
I'd say four songs is a cassette.
Well, this is physically, it looks like a normal cassette and everything. So anyways, four songs. It's called the debut EP. But here you go. Here's where you want to talk about how cheaply you can make these things. So this cassette's been put out by Big Dunce Records, which has been out of Los Angeles. So the cover art's the cover art, right? You can go and you can print that cheaply. It's just print and paper. The cassette itself is completely blank, except that they have gone and they've taken some embossing tape and, you know, punched out the name of the band and stuck that embossing tape to the cassette. And there you go. not even bothering to go and like get like professional printing or anything like that onto the physical cassette medium either.
This is badass looking, this tape. This looks badass, Adam. I haven't even heard it yet. It looks badass.
It's badass. So I'm going to play a song. This is like super 70s-ish punk. It's great. So the song I'm going to play is called Shadow of Your Former Self. It's by the Mark Vodka Group out of Halifax, Nova Scotia. It's great. Here we go. And we will see you guys next week. Podcast at punknews.org is how you send us an email. Do that. Bye. Yeah.
This has been a Valor Underground production. I am Greg Simpson, producer of this podcast. Hit me up if you want me to mix, master, or produce your podcast, even from afar. Or, you got a band you want to come record with me in scenic Lafayette, Indiana? Let's do it. Hit me up at greg@valorundergroundstudios.com.